Mr. Trouble never hangs around when he hears this mighty sound.
Here I come to save the day.
That means that mighty sea is on the way. Yes, sir, when there is a wrong to right, mighty sea will join the fight. On the sea or on the land, he gets the situation well in hand.
So though we are in danger, we never despair, 'cause we know that where there's danger, he is there.
He is there, on the land, on the sea, in the air.
Alrighty, folks. We're here for another edition of the Mighty Seek podcast. I'm Dan Kirkendall, and I'm known as Seeker. So that's where actually the name comes from, is Mighty Seek, Seeker, you know, whatever. And the fact that I'm a fan of the old Mighty Mouse cartoons, as you may have noticed if you've ever visited my site, or if you've just listened to the intro tune. So, not sure why I have such an affinity for Mighty Mouse, but he is generally pretty cool. Today is not a real topic podcast. I'm going to kind of ramble a little bit. I've got some updates for my listeners and basically go over some of the ideas for future podcasts. So I'll start off a little bit with discussing some of the changes on the website. Of course, I'm using PodPress, which is my plugin, which I'll be talking about here in a minute. But I've also added a forum onto the site. I would really like to try to generate some level of discussion among web app developers that are dealing with security issues. So right now, most of the places that I've seen are very generalized around, you know, network security. Mostly. I mean, there's not a lot around actually doing web application security development and dealing with web application security issues. There are some organizations like WASC and WASP or something like that, Web Application Security Consortium, and what's the other one? Great, I'm forgetting. Anyway, I'll try to put some of these links in the show notes. These sites are great, but the problem I see with them is that really getting involved is difficult. I don't think either one's done a really good job of making it easy to really get involved and have open discussions. I may be wrong. I haven't visited those sites in a while. They're generally focused around what they call the top 10. Maybe we'll discuss that in the show. That's actually probably a good issue to get into, is some of the top 10s out there and what they really mean. A lot of them are, I don't know, they're very generalized, very, you know, broad range and scope. So maybe we can discuss that a little bit in the show. I want to talk a little bit about PodPress. There's been, if you're podcasting, PodPress has made huge improvements or advances since the beginning when I first released this thing. I've put in a fair amount of time on this, and it's a pretty cool plugin. It's a pretty darn good solution, really, for podcasting. At least I'm extremely proud of it, and my users are real happy, and I'm real happy using it. You know, I'm a user too, so. It does a lot. I mean, the feature list you can get on the website. Let me pull it up here. Not that I kind of don't remember. Well, I guess I forget a lot. Okay, PodPress is basically a plugin for WordPress. Now, I have not done a full security review of WordPress. I have reviewed some of it. And as I write the plugin, I'm, you know, looking at a whole slew of things. I mean, I'm just going through a ton of the code. Overall, they've done a good job. They have a lot of automated filtering that takes place. You know, they go through all the inputs and automatically backslash them so that they're database safe, and which means you have to, you know, as a plugin developer, you have to do a lot of strip slashes and all that kind of stuff. So they've done a lot of the standard good practices. I haven't specifically found any vulnerabilities on the end where users are allowed to input to the site. So like in the comment system and that kind of thing. They've done a good job of cleaning up that area and making sure that, you know, cross-site scripting attacks aren't going to succeed. So overall, I'm fairly happy with WordPress. Now, I haven't really done a full audit. I haven't spent a large amount of time trying to find vulnerabilities and just digging in. I mean, you know, I haven't done my, what I would call an audit. I've just done a slight, you know, bit of review. So the review has gone well. The full audit is pending and will come soon since I'm using the product and I need to make sure that it's not opening me up to problems. Now, WordPress does have support for plugins, and this is where PodPress makes use out of. And a plugin can do anything. So, you know, it's PHP code, and really, there's no way to limit what the plugin's allowed to do. So, if you're using WordPress, be very careful about plugins, because they can do just about anything they want. And some can be written pretty cleverly to hide what they're doing. So, you know, for every plugin that I'm using, I've done a separate review on those. I've actually done far more code review of the plugins that I use than I do WordPress. And that is because, you know, the plugins are going to have a bit lower audience level. So that is actually one of the topics I want to talk about a little bit in this show. That's in my show notes here. Okay, so some of the features of PodPress. PodPress is a plugin to WordPress, meaning you have to have a WordPress install of either 1.5 or one of the 2.x releases of WordPress. You install this thing, and then it basically improves what you see when you're creating a post, right? So when you're going to, you know, in the blog, you know, creating a blog or a post, it basically has a whole, you know, it adds these new fields for defining where your media files are. It'll auto-detect the file sizes and durations. If it's a video file, it'll allow you to define like a preview image. It detects the content types and, you know, modifies itself according to that. It even has support now for giving it a torrent file link, and then you can actually have torrent casting. So, you know, users that can support downloading from torrent, if you want to save some bandwidth using a torrent tracker and, you know, the torrent systems, you can do that. In its configuration, it allows you to see what your podcast will look like in iTunes. Since iTunes really is the 800-pound gorilla right now, it allows you to see what it's going to look like in iTunes. And as you change things, it's going to change that little preview in real time. It's pretty nice. One big feature that people really love is that it gives you download statistics, so you can actually see the counts. It even breaks them down by, you know, where the download came from. The download link in the feed is a little different than the download link on the web page and the download link that the player uses. So it's able to track each one independently and then also give you a total. So that's kind of handy. I've already put in support for premium podcasting. I've posted about that. So if you don't read my blog, well, I don't blog a whole lot, but I do some. So, you know, it may be worth visiting the site on occasion. I've done a post about premium podcasting around Rush Limbaugh's support for podcasting. He finally did it as a real podcast, meaning that it has an RSS feed and iTunes can work with it among all the other players or podcatchers. So I went and studied how all that works and basically wrote it into this tool. So that's pretty cool. It's got all kinds of players, you know, so if you've got videos, anything you want, any kind of media file, even if you're not podcasting, this is actually useful just to manage media files because it's got a bunch of different players and it'll handle just about anything. And I've got a ton of features on the way, but it's a really cool tool. If you're doing your own podcast, then and you are using WordPress, or you're trying to find a web management solution, you know, a content management manager, then I would definitely suggest WordPress and PodPress. Now, PodPress has really given me a chance to start coding again. It's something I haven't been doing for a while. I've been really focusing on the security side of things and breaking down applications. So it's been kind of nice and refreshing mentally to be able to sit down and code again. And remember, you know, all of the ways that we do bad things. We get lazy, whatever. You know, there's a lot of ways to create vulnerabilities, and I was kind of having fun just thinking, oh man, in the past I may have done it this way, and that would have been horrible, but it would have been a nice little shortcut. Now again, I'm plugged into WordPress, so I'm able to benefit from all of what it's doing automatically. And one of the key things to note there is the framework. When you're developing code in a framework that has security built into it, then you're much better off. You're inherently more secure. So, you know, I've discussed this before, is it is really around the framework. You always want to build a framework for your application rather than just coding individual files that do their one little thing and are self-contained. You definitely want to have a framework that your application works under. So, you know, maybe it'll be a series of include files, so you'll include one, you know, functions file or whatever, and that is going to go through and do the automated security input validation or whatever. You know, you want to have a framework for your application, no matter its size, really. You know, it's really important to put a solid framework in place. And this is really what I had done with like PHP Groupware when I developed that. I really didn't work in the application space of that project. I focused entirely on the framework. That's the stuff that's always been interesting to me. Because when you build a robust and solid framework, then you really impact all of the rest of the application at that point. Anything that you do that improves the framework, that, you know, improves its inherent security, you've improved all of the applications built around that framework. Now, if that doesn't make a lot of sense to you, maybe I'll have to do a little bit of in-depth about building a framework. So, you know, stick around. It would be actually helpful if you went to the site, and comments about the show are really helpful. I don't get very many of them, so if you're out there, I definitely would appreciate a shout-out and a little, you know, hint on the kind of content you're looking for. So, you know, as I said, this is kind of a ramble cast. I'm just going to hit a few topics and get this out. All right, let me get back to my show notes. Let's see. I have a number of ideas for podcasts that I want to do. Part of what I wanted to do here was just run through some. I would love some feedback on the kind of things you guys are interested in. You know, I'm trying to work with other podcasts, such as like Security Catalyst, and I've been talking to Michael from that podcast. He's doing a great job with a lot of the generalized security stuff. Doesn't go a lot of in-depth, which I tend to want to do, and what I tend to do in my show is go a little more in depth. I'm still a little nervous about going, you know, really in depth, but not because I don't know the stuff, it's just that I don't want to overwhelm you guys or, you know, make it so that it's, you know, I've got 5 listeners that can really follow what I'm going and doing. I don't know. You know, there's Software As, which is a great podcast. Our Software As She's Developed, I think, is its full title. The website is softwareas.com or .org. And he does go into some real in-depth, so don't know. Maybe that is the route to go. And his show is great. Michael Mimoff, I think, is his name, and fabulous job. So yeah, if you're doing web app development and you want to, you know, understand some of the different, you know, methodologies and, you know, if you're interested in Ajax, definitely want to listen to his stuff. He does a lot of stuff around patterns, which, you know, I'm all for this stuff because it's really, again, patterns is a framework. So you're building frameworks and you're building patterns of code, I guess. And that really, you know, you want to insert security at those levels rather than at the line-by-line level. So, you know, I always appreciate the benefit of building a framework, using patterns. That stuff is the route to go. A well-developed, well-engineered application is much easier to secure than, you know, spaghetti code everywhere. All right, so let's see, back to my show notes here. One of the things I really want to get into is Ajax development issues. That is definitely going to be a podcast of its own. And I don't mean how to do Ajax. Okay, there is tons of information about that. Michael Mamoff's, you know, Software As is a great podcast. If you want to get into that and you want to, and you're just getting started, then I definitely recommend the show. However, the security issues around Ajax are not something that are covered in really anywhere that I'm seeing. Now, it's not that Ajax has, you know, major security issues. And, you know, this is definitely going to be its own podcast. But in brief, the problems around Ajax are that it can allow the developer to become lazy on their input validation routines, because you know you don't have a browser going directly to these interfaces, so you generally will build, like, you know, some back-end script that the Ajax code is going to actually hit and make its request. It's going to send the input and get some output. You could be sending output in any number of ways. You could be actually sending HTML, you could be sending an XML that then gets later processed to, you know, add DOM elements, or maybe it's going through an SSL engine along the lines of Google Maps. There's a tons of ways that, you know, you could be delivering the content, and there are a number of ways that you can be receiving it. You could be receiving it using a SOAP service, which is, again, something I want to do a podcast about. But the Ajax backend and the SOAP backend, those are all kind of the same issue, is that because you don't have a browser going directly to this that a user's seeing, this is being done by some backend script. A lot of times I've seen the backend scripts being very haphazardly developed, because they're trying to very quickly deal with the input and send something back. And you're very concerned about performance, as you should be, because you don't want to be tying the Ajax. You don't want to be tying up additional, you know, connections, because you have to have, you know, your handler events and all these things. It gets hard to manage at times. So, you know, there's really the desire to make sure that the back end is processing quickly and the code's lean and mean and, you know, does what it needs to do. The problem is you can get lazy on the input validation routines because you're not thinking of a user actually hitting this. You're actually thinking of the, you know, the JavaScript code making these requests. And so it just becomes something you're not paying attention to as intensely as you do when a user's visiting the site or visiting the page. And it's just a mental thing, but, you know, I do keep seeing this in a lot of code that I review, you know, that I'm looking at for the Ajax backends. So the Ajax itself is fine. There's not a lot of security issues. The XML on the client side, the XML HTTP request object does not allow you to make requests out of domain. So, it's generally pretty secure. You know, it's not, you know, it's not something really that cross-site scripting attacks can really leverage, which is frustrating for the cross-site scripting attackers, but is good for you. And so far, the browsers really follow the rules on that, so there's not a big issue there. Another thing I want to do a show about is web application firewalls. Web application firewalls, let's see, they're not as good or useful as a standard network firewall. And the reason is that the content is so dynamic. You know, the firewall isn't able to determine the type of inputs that each variable should be receiving. So it will protect against a lot of things. And web app firewalls are good in general. But don't think that just because you drop in a web app firewall, you're entirely secure. The application still needs to be coded well. The firewall cannot block everything. If it blocked everything, then it would break your app too often. So, you know, the web app firewall makers and developers do have to kind of be a little more liberal than you may want, but they have to so that they don't break your application's legitimate functionality, and it's very hard for them. So, you know, they can, by default, they do very little. Well, no. By default, they will block against some things, but then you have to go in usually and customize them around your application, and this is where it gets to be hard. So, you know, if you've got legacy applications and there's no way you're going to ever, you know, go back and solve the problems in code and build, you know, proper input validation routines and all that kind of stuff, if that's just not going to happen, then, you know, the least you could do is deploy a web app firewall. That's definitely a good step. But if at all possible, you want to code your app properly and go through the development cycle. In the meantime, putting a web app firewall and maybe an intrusion detection system, those are all good things. But anyway, that's a show I definitely want to get into. I want to talk about all the different choices out there. I'll probably make recommendations and, you know, maybe not. I want to try to stay as vendor neutral as possible, even if there's a product that a company I'm working for is has out. You know, I may be more familiar with products that, you know, any company I'm working for or dealing with, you know, it has, and I'll know their strengths and weaknesses maybe a little better, but I will try to be objective about that because I want to service you guys, the listeners. Let's see. Another one of the topics, and the reason I'm going through these topic lists, again, is I would like some feedback. I'm interested in knowing what you guys are interested in knowing and learning. So, you know, giving me some feedback, shooting me a message on the blog would definitely help. You know, maybe it'll help set the priority of these different topics. And if you've got topics I'm not mentioning here, I would like to hear those too. Okay. One of the things here I wanted to talk about is specific functionality when doing web application development and some of the stuff that is specifically problematic. One thing that comes immediately to mind is supporting file uploading and, you know, the issues around that, because usually when you allow a file to be uploaded, you're going to then read it, which means that you're then supporting reading and spitting out a file off of the system. So those two issues, writing files to the system as well as reading files and displaying their contents, those are big issues in security. They have to be done right, or the exploitation of those can be fairly traumatic, you know, fairly dramatic, I guess, is the best way to say that. It could be bad, very bad, if you do those wrong and an attacker is able to leverage them to read other files on your system, overwrite files on your system. You know, they could do some damage. So there are bits of code when you're doing, you know, app development that you have to be very careful about. Another one is also when you're reading files remotely. So, you know, if you're doing any kind of opening of sockets, you know, doing curl, whatever, you're making requests to another machine from code. Again, if you're driving that based on any kind of input, which you probably are, you know, those could also be damaging. Imagine, for say, let's say I'm able to, you know, maybe getting your internal IP address range isn't so hard. So let's say, you know, there's a way so that I can, you know, like, okay, in PodPress, you can actually specify the URL to your media file, and then you can do an auto detect to see if it's a, you know, what type of file, you know, what the file size is. Now, let's say I was actually displaying the content, right, rather than just the file size, which, you know, then I'm just basically, you know, for the file size, all I have to do is hit a quick request, basically get the first, you know, 1K of characters, and in the HTTP header, I can get the file size that the web server is reporting, and then just rely on that. So I'm not actually getting a lot. And, you know, and then I basically take the one little chunk of data, I parse everything down and give you one bit of result. But let's say I was actually letting you just see the contents of what you just requested. Well, that may be totally useful and legitimate functionality. But if the server's on your network and has any access to your internal network, right? So let's say it's got, you know, it's sitting behind the firewall and its real address is, you know, 192.168.1.10 or something. And, you know, but it has the firewall actually has the internet address and does all the redirecting. Well, then I could use that functionality to start making requests for, you know, computers on the inside of the network. So let's say you've got a personal firewall running on your computer, or you've got some internal applications on another server. I could potentially make, you know, put in, you know, http://192.168.1.9, and, you know, and submit the, you know, basically what's going to happen is the web server is going to then make the request. The web server would have access to that machine, and then, you know, it's basically a reverse proxy, where the user is able to leverage that and be able to see stuff inside of your network. So anyway, there are specific issues that are more sensitive when you're doing web application development than others. So, you know, if you're doing normal, you know, SQL requests and you're displaying data out of there, blah, 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 there are issues. You've got to be careful of SQL injection attacks and all that kind of stuff. But there's just a special level of security concern around bits of functionality, like the ones I mentioned. And I'll go into some others, but those are some of the highlights. And I would like to spend a little more time on sensitive issues, you know, basically, is going to be the topic there. One of the other topics I want to discuss is the use of open source applications that are out there. There's a ton of freely available web applications that are open sourced, or otherwise easily accessible, cheap to nearly cheap, or free to nearly free in price. So there's a ton of these applications, but I want to discuss a little bit about the issues of actually deploying them. So, you know, picking them and deploying them. You know, I'm using WordPress, and I have a plugin, PodPress, out there. You know, these things, now PodPress in particular, doesn't actually really allow the user to input anything, so it's pretty secure. the, by the user, I mean the outside user. The administrator of the site is interacting with PodPress. The end user of the site is only going to be seeing some of the output. So, you know, the administrator, the controls I have to put in place are a bit reduced because that person pretty much can do anything anyway. So, you know, I have coded to try to be as safe as I can, but I haven't had to like be in full panic mode about everything because this is the administrator. Now I'm going to be soon supporting what's called a WordPress multi-user or WordPress MU, and for that I probably will have to make sure that, you know, who's submitting the data, you know, make sure I'm doing a lot more checks around, you know, when something is submitted to be saved, that I'm verifying that that person has the rights to do it and all that kind of stuff. There's probably tighter controls on that, and I'm not sure how much WordPress handles automatically or what. So, anyway, the open source applications, you know, it's hard to pick. You know, I mean, there some things are popular, but that does not make them secure. A good example, and I don't... Well, I guess I do mean to pick on PHPBB. PHPBB is extremely popular. It is a fully featured bulletin board, forum, whatever you want to call it, web application. It is great. It is great as the end, you know, the end user experience is fantastic. The functionality it provides is great. The security mechanisms and framework is terrible. Okay, it's not terrible, but it is riddled with problems. They do try to do some input validation, you know, but it was never built into the core framework in a way that made everything else secure inherently. You know, it's been, you know, a matter of going back and trying to slap on security. And, you know, I've discussed this before and I'll say it again, is security is not an afterthought. If it's an afterthought, it's a, you know, it's going to be a total mess. You know, it just doesn't work as an afterthought. It does not get solved as an afterthought. It gets solved, you know, in the core design. If it is an afterthought, you have to go back and re-engineer the application to address the security and make it, you know, a fully integrated issue rather than going through all the inputs that you can remember and adding a filter on them. You know, it just has to be done in an automated fashion that is kind of forced, you know. Input isn't allowed through unless it's filtered. So, you know. So although PHPB is very popular, it does not make it secure. And this goes, you know, there's a litany of web applications out there that I could go through. And so what I want to do in the podcast for that topic is just go through the issues. You know, sit down and talk about, okay, I need an application to do X, and how do I pick from all of the applications that do X, you know, how do I pick the right one? You know, okay, I need a form on my application. PHPBB is popular, and it's out there, and, you know, I could download it right now and install it easy, and, you know, okay, great, but you're going to be introducing security problems into your site. Now, they are getting better and better over time, but, you know, there's just, again, that's an inherent problem. So, security bugs are going to pop up. So, how do you pick? You know, for the MightySeq site, I'm using vBulletin. And, you know, I want to go into issues like that and go into the discussion about these different applications. You know, I'll try to stick with the very common applications so that, you know, when I make a recommendation, it's something that's a bit more useful, you know, rather than, you know, some niche web application, I guess. I probably won't cover those. But, you know, I want to basically lay the foundation for making use of open source applications without introducing major security problems. You know, I don't think it's worth coding everything by yourself and on your own just because you want to make sure it's secure. Now, I'm going to be there and say you need to be using secure applications, but you can do it with open source applications. You know, if you can, anyway, I'll go into those issues, but that's a podcast topic. So anyway, you guys get back to me. Let me know what you're really interested in, and I would like to get into these issues. I want to dig in. I've got a ton of ideas, and it's just a matter of I got some show prep to do, and I'm going to start recording these things as frequently as I can. I need to get them out and then come up with other stuff to talk about. Oh, I definitely want to talk about web application scanners. I've mentioned, you know, the company I work for is NT Objectives. We have a scanner called NTO Spider that is really good, but I do want to talk about them. I've kind of kept that off and pushed that off for a while because I have to do it in an unbiased as possible way. I want to, you know, be fair to all of the scanners and really discuss kind of the general issues around scanners, what they can provide and what they can't. You know, what to kind of expect from them, how they benefit you, you know, where they still aren't complete, and, you know, you can't do it with just an automated tool. You know, I think our tool is extremely well automated, and I personally put a lot of effort into automating everything that I possibly can, but you cannot automate everything. Human leaps of logic play when you're dealing with security. You know, we can, as humans, we have an intuition. We can read things and comprehend what we're seeing. An automated tool just can't do that. But an automated tool can certainly be more thorough in the sense that, you know, a human is not going to want to add a little single quote attack, add a DB inject attack on every parameter, on every page, or attempt a cross-site scripting on every input on every page. A human is not going to do that. It is too tedious. It is too prone to human error. You know, I'm missing something. An automated tool can do that stuff. And that's really its job, is to go through and to try everything on everything. Well, not, you know, it wants to be smart, and I'll talk about that a little bit. But the automated tool can handle the tedious task of really being thorough about the tests that it does perform. But then there are things that a human needs to step in and do. And, you know, I definitely want to go into those issues. I talked about it a little bit in the last two podcasts. I think we talked about it a bit in the security engagement cast. And I really hope those were useful. They were a heck of a lot of fun to do, but I'm not sure how useful. I just can hope they are. So anyway, this podcast isn't full of individual, you know, information, I guess. This is not a topic yet. This is a... Anyway, I want to throw it out there. These are the topics that are coming up. I would like your feedback. If I don't get it, then I'm just going to start going down my list. Talk to you guys later. Thank you for listening. This has been the Mighty Seek Podcast.
Save the day. That means that Mighty Seed is on the way.